On this episode of Skeptico, Lieutenant Bill Hughes of the New Jersey State Police discusses the controversial nature of working with psychic detectives.
To be honest with you, I really don't give a damn what they think or what they say. I know what I saw and I know what was there. I mean, how can you be that closed mind? How can you be a journalist and be that closed mind? But in this case, Nancy was on the mark on a lot of things.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and today on Skeptico, we're going to continue our investigation into the double homicide psychic detective case of Amy Hoffman that occurred back in the mid-1980s. Now, you'll recall that on the last episode of Skeptico, we had an interview with Nancy Weber, the psychic detective who worked with law enforcement on this. And she provided a very succinct, very lucid description of the information that she provided law enforcement. So let me play you that clip from the last episode. This is an interview with Nancy Weber in which she's listing the information that she provided law enforcement as part of her assistance as a psychic detective in this case.
Several of the things that they will recall and repeat, that the man who did it, his first name is James, his last name is Polish, multiple syllables, beginning with a K and ending in an ish. He came up from Florida where he had been in prison for murder. He was released inappropriately. They will be sued, the state. He lived in an area of Morristown called the Hollow. He had use of several cars, but he had a car he was driving that will have forensic evidence of blood or hair. He was about 5'10", very narrow, angular features, dark hair, that strangely enough, I kept seeing the hair being pulled off like a wig with a V. The other part was that there were strange tire tracks that would be very unique and pertinent to catching him.
Okay, so that's Nancy's claim. And today on Skeptico, what we're going to do is dig into that. We have an interview with Lieutenant Bill Hughes of the New Jersey State Police. He's one of the homicide investigators that was assigned to a special task force to investigate this crime. We also have an interview with Captain Jim Moore, another police officer assigned to this task force, who at the time of this case had never met either Bill Hughes or Nancy Weber. And then we're going to look at accounts as they're reported in the New York Times, and that further corroborates some of the basic facts of this case. Now, as you'll see, when we put all this together, all the information points in the same direction. And that is that Nancy Weber was somehow able to use her psychic abilities to provide remarkable, useful information to law enforcement about the perpetrator of these crimes. So given that the evidence is so compelling, at least in my opinion it is, and given that this is a case that wasn't hard to investigate, heck, a bio channel had already investigated it several years ago. And given the fact that there's dozens and dozens of other cases that are just as well documented, just as many credible law enforcement professionals coming forward and saying the same story, I was skeptical, I don't know how it works, it was amazing, I don't know how she got this information, it helped me solve the case, the story's repeated over and over again. Given all that, why the skepticism? Why the non-believers? Why the rabid debunking, needing to prove all this wrong? Well, I think we have to look no further than a couple episodes ago in Skeptico when we interviewed Dr. Carol Tavris, who's written a book, Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me, and devoted a good deal of her time researching how we all have this need to reject disconfirming information, and how that need is driven by a need to self-justify our beliefs. And of course, this is something that believers, as well as skeptics, need to fight against, need to make a conscious effort to avoid. And that's what I'm going to ask you to do today if you're a skeptic. I'm going to ask you to put aside any preconceived notions you have about how this is impossible, this can't happen, there must be fraud involved, someone's pulling a magic trick. Put all that stuff aside and come at this evidence with a fresh perspective. Trust that you can weigh the evidence, look at the data, and follow the data wherever it leads. Remember that this is just one case, and you're never going to be sure, but also remember that there are a lot of things you never thought possible that turned out to be so. And if you do find yourself changing your position just a little, realize that you're in good company. Everyone who listens to Skeptico started out as a skeptic. Stay with us. My interview with Bill Hughes of the New Jersey State Police and much, much more is coming up next here on Skeptico. Hi, Lieutenant Hughes. It's Alex Sicaris.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
Good.
Thanks for doing this. I'm going to try and make it brief. I know your time is kind of crunched there. Here's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to first, if you could give us a little bit of a background on your bio and your experience in law enforcement, just a thumbnail sketch, if you would.
Well, I began as a municipal police officer in Mount Olive Township in 1978. That's in Morris County, New Jersey. After about 3 years on the job, I was designated a detective, and as a detective, that's when I eventually met Nancy. Through the course of my career, I stayed a Mount Olive police officer for 7 years. In 1985, I left to join the New Jersey State Police, and graduated from the academy January of 1986, and have been a trooper ever since. Going up through the ranks to my current rank of lieutenant, and I'm a station commander at Perryville Station in Hunterdon County, New Jersey right now.
Great. And now tell us a little bit about your recollection of the Amy Hoffman case, how you became involved, and just a quick sketch of what information you got from or used from Nancy Weber.
After the Amy Hoffman murder, the lead agency investigating that case was the Morris County Prosecutor's Office. It wasn't too long after Amy was murdered that Deidre Hoffman was abducted and murdered as well. She ended up being killed on Interstate 80 in Warren County, had a rest area in Warren County. The circumstances surrounding her murder were similar to those of Amy Hoffman, so it became aware of the Prosecutor's Office and the State Police, who became involved because Interstate 80 is state police jurisdiction. It became apparent to them that they may be dealing with the same killer here. The circumstances were similar in both cases. So what they did was they formed a task force, and they asked all municipal police departments in Morris County to send representatives down to assist with the investigation. They knew there were going to be lots of leads to follow up on and whatnot. So our chief in Mount Olive sent myself and another detective down to the Morris County task force meeting that they had at the Morris County Academy. We really didn't become that involved in the case because there weren't that many leads that they needed everybody for at the time. But they still wanted everybody informed. They wanted all the detectives to know some of the circumstances surrounding the case. Since I had time on my hand, I had a little time on my hand, and I knew that I had used Nancy Weber before, I decided to go to her and speak with her a little bit regarding the case. And she said some interesting things regarding the case that I was unaware of at the time. Specifically, she knew that Amy had been sexually assaulted, and yet that information had been withheld from the press early on in the case. And I didn't find that abnormal or unusual, because a lot of times a lot of information is withheld from the press only because, not to be deceptive, but investigators like to withhold stuff that only the perpetrator would know, so that mm-hmm. if they do catch the guy and he does confess to it, they know that they've got the right guy. What you have in cases like this is you get a lot of people that just seek publicity, and they will admit to anything to get their names in the papers or to get that kind of publicity, even if they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So to make sure that they've got the right person, investigators will ask the person certain things that only the perpetrator would know. And that's how they, a lot of times, they will verify that they have the right guy. But in this case, I didn't find it that unusual. And when I inquired, at that point, they still did not know that, that Amy had been sexually assaulted because the postmortem had not been completed and that determination had not been made.
Mm-hmm.
But at a later date, they did find out that, yes, indeed, she had been sexually assaulted. And this was something that Nancy knew before anybody else knew it.
How did you become involved with Jimmy Moore? Was he also on the task force?
Jimmy was probably more involved with it because Amy Hoffman had been from Parsippany Troy Hills Township, which was Jim's jurisdiction. And I knew that I might have something here. I knew that Nancy might be able to offer some assistance in the investigation. So I had to figure out who to contact. And I chose Jim. I decided to call Jimmy Moore and tell him what we had here. I needed what I felt would be a receptive ear. I'd never met Jim before before that date, but I had to reach out for somebody. So I reached out for him and brought him on board and had him meet Nancy. And he was pretty much just as impressed as I was with what she had to offer.
When we spoke to Captain Moore, the thing that he said that I thought was remarkable and would be incredibly useful for law enforcement was the specific information that Nancy was able to somehow provide about the name, the location, and that he had come from Florida. Do you recall those that information coming through?
Oh, absolutely. We took Nancy for a ride, and we would take her by the various crime scenes, the abduction scene where the ladies were left, and she would come up with tidbits of information on the suspect and how the crimes were perpetrated and everything like that. But through the course of our travels, she did come up with part of a name. She didn't have complete names for us, but she was able to tell us that the subject was of Eastern European heritage, that he had lived in New Jersey before, that he had been arrested in New Jersey before, that he had lived in Florida, that he had done hard time in Florida for another murder that he committed, stuff like that. She was able to give not specific areas where the subject lived, but generalized information. For example, she couldn't give us an exact address, but she knew that he'd been had lived in Wharton, New Jersey. She couldn't give us specific information on the arrest, but she knew that he had been arrested in Mount Olive Township. And coincidentally, she came up with that information as we were driving by the very spot where he was arrested. Mount Olive on Route 206 had a roller rink in town. We were driving by that roller rink coming up Route 206, and she got a feeling. She says, oh, she says, he's been arrested before here in Mount Olive Township a long time ago, a while back, she says. And come to find out that, yeah, he had indeed been arrested at that very spot where she had that feeling. He'd been arrested by Mount Olive Township for what was then kind of a vagrancy charge.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she came up with these tidbits of information that that were just phenomenal.
You know, one of the things that I found it fascinating when I was talking to Nancy, and it kind of plays right into the story that we're trying to tell in terms of how skeptical people, because I don't know if you've ever encountered this, and maybe you have, but skeptical people can be very antagonistic against anyone who stands up and says this stuff has happened, regardless of who they are. And they can even be pretty hard on law enforcement, saying, gee, you know, that guy, single out that person, that guy must be nuts, that guy must be crazy. And when we spoke with Nancy, she told us just such a story when the Bio Channel story was coming out that you had encountered that with a journalist. So what has been your experience like in terms of just telling your story in terms of what happened?
Well, it is what it is. I'm skeptical of a lot of things, but I'm open-minded to know that there's a lot of things that we can't even begin to understand that are fact out there. And I, to be honest with you, I really don't give a damn what they think or what they say. I know what I saw and I know what was there. So I'm going to be retiring in 2 years and they can do or say whatever they think. It makes no difference to me. That's just how I feel about it. I mean, how can you be that closed mind? How can you be a journalist and be that closed mind? It just, it boggles the imagination.
And the other thing I've found just in talking to law enforcement a little bit is you guys are pragmatic. I mean, if it works, you know, why not use it? There's a lot of, it's hard doing these investigations.
Even if it doesn't work, I know as an investigator for 30 years, I know that you can become so focused on one thing, you know, so narrow-minded that you lose sight of everything, all the obvious things that are standing right around you. But in this case, Nancy was on the mark on a lot of things.
Okay, any other remembrances or thoughts on this case?
Well, you know, she pegged him for having gotten some traffic summonses in Mendham Township. When we were driving through Mendham, she knew that he had gotten traffic tickets from a local police officer. And she didn't know the name of the officer, but she knew his last name started with a C. And the C was a hard C, not a soft C. It sounded more like a K. And come to find out that Officer Tommy Costanza had issued this guy some summonses for motor vehicle violations. This was right before he ended up getting arrested. There's no doubt on my mind that it works. And I've worked with her on a case one time where she wasn't able to help us. And if she can't, you know, she'll tell you.
Uh-huh.
You know, she'll tell you, I'm getting nothing here. And we had an arson in town. And we used her. And she couldn't come up with anything. She says, you're not going to find this guy unless he walks into a police station and confesses, because he's long gone. He was a vagrant just passing through and just saw an opportunity to set a fire here. So there was nothing that she could do to help us, and she told us right up front.
Well, great. This has been very helpful, and I appreciate the time, Lieutenant Hughes.
It was, you know, it was my pleasure. I've got to emphasize that she did not solve this case. This case was solved by hard work of the investigators that were involved, but she was consistently pointing us in the right direction. She was coming up with information that I didn't have at the time.
Okay, well, thanks again.
Okay, take care, sir.
Okay, there were several interesting parts about this interview, but let me point out a couple of them. First, I thought it was interesting just hearing about the dynamics of the investigation. There's a murder, then there's another murder, similarities between the murders. Task force is formed, and it brings these law enforcement agencies together. One person is murdered on interstate highway, so it's state police. Others, local police. They come together. And I think that's particularly relevant and important because it explains how Bill Hughes and Jim Moore came together. When they didn't know each other, he just reaches out to Jim Moore because he decides there aren't any leads coming in. We have to try and solve this case on our own. Nancy Weber is a psychic detective I've used in the past. He goes and talks to her, and then he calls Jim Moore. Interesting, because it further establishes that Jim Moore is new to the whole thing and has to be convinced. Another point brought out in the interview is this whole idea of the sexual assault. She's raped. No one reports that in the newspaper. As a matter of fact, when Bill Hughes goes back to his police department and says, hey, do we know that? Do we know if that's the case? No one has that as an established fact. It doesn't come out until much later. As a matter of fact, later on when I talk about the articles that I found in the New York Times, there's no mention of that at all. So is that information that Nancy brings forward, that she is sexually assaulted, has been raped, and that isn't in the paper, is that remarkable? Yes, that is quite remarkable. Is it useful? Obviously, that kind of information is very useful. Finally, the point that he makes that I think is very important to bring forward is this idea that Nancy Weber did not solve this crime and that psychic detectives never solve crimes. She drives around in the car with him and gives all these incredible, remarkable clues, but it still takes a lot of police work to piece this stuff together, find out what it means, and find the perpetrator. So next up, let's hear from Bill Hughes' partner in this case, Jim Moore, who was a captain in the New Jersey police and has since retired, but I reached him on the phone and I asked him about the case. Here's that interview. Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of your background in law enforcement?
Well, I started with the Parsippany Police Department in 1964, and on the average, every 5 years, rose in rank, sergeant, lieutenant, captain. And when I was promoted to captain, I was put in charge of the investigative division. And during the course of my term in the investigative bureau, we had the double homicide with Amy Hoffman and Deidre O'Brien.
And this is a case that we've been talking about that you eventually wound up working with Nancy Weber as an advisor to you. And as we were chatting a minute ago, you said that when you first met Nancy, maybe not at this case, but before, you were skeptical of using a psychic. Is that correct?
Well, I was skeptical of all psychics. I really didn't have much belief in them. I had never really dealt with any individuals of that type of background. And while we were working on the double homicide, the gentleman that I partnered with said that he had used Nancy in the past to help gather information on other cases, and he was wondering if I would be interested in meeting her, perhaps to maybe give us some more insight on what we were investigating. So I said, well, we have nothing to lose because we didn't have a lot to work on. And I said, you know, I'd be willing to meet with her and we'll see how it goes. So Bill arranged a meeting for me to meet with Nancy. And after that initial meeting, I was quite impressed with her. We then started working together as a trio and gathering facts and information on the homicides.
What I was hoping to do is go through some specific information that Nancy says that she was able to bring forward, and I just wanted you to recollect as best as you can whether or not you recall Nancy giving you this information. So the first thing she said was she was able to identify that the perpetrator's first name was James and that his last name was Polish and had multiple syllables and it began with a K. Was that the kind of information she told you?
Well, yeah, she did say that she felt that his first name was James and there was a hard K in his last name, and he was from Eastern European descent. She also told me that the individual came from the Morristown area and had moved to Florida where he committed a murder and was sentenced to jail. And while in prison, he committed a second murder of an inmate. And eventually he got out and had returned to the Morristown area, and that either he or a member of his family either had a gas station or was working in a gas station in the Wharton area. Then she told me he was very upset with the Mendham Police Department, and she didn't know why, but he was really upset with them. In fact, the on a Friday, and that Monday I was going to go to the Mendham Police Department to research their files to see if we could come up with some information. We knew we were looking for an older model green Chevrolet, and the forensic team of the Sheriff's Department had taken a tire impression that was found at the scene of Deidre O'Brien's abduction, so we had something to go on if we found the right car. And she also then described this individual, you know, as having dark hair, kind of like a chiseled face, thin build, tall with a thin build. And the amazing thing is when we finally caught Kadadich is that all the information that she had given me was so true to fact, like it was hard to believe that she was so exact on what she told us.
So, Captain Moore, when she gave you that information, did you have any knowledge of whether that information was correct or not correct? Did you have any? Was there any information in the police department that would verify that before you eventually caught him?
No, nothing. The only thing we had to go on was a description of the car. And I believe we had a vague description of an individual with dark hair was seen near Amy's car in the parking lot of the shopping mall before she was abducted. And that's basically all we had to go on.
You know, the last thing, do you want to share anything about the circumstances that eventually brought you to apprehend? Is it Kadatich? Is that how you say his name?
Yes, James Kadatich. Actually, he kind of caught himself. There was a call that came in to the Morris Township Police Department. An individual was claiming that he was stabbed by a woman. And when the police arrived at the scene, which was his home, they were questioning him, and he was complaining that this woman had stabbed him in the back. And while they were at the scene, one of the officers noticed this green Chevrolet of what we were looking for in the driveway. And then through forensic identification with the tire, they realized that that was the vehicle we were looking for, and Kadatich was taken into custody at that time.
Great. Great. Quite an amazing story, huh?
Yeah. Did Nancy tell you about her meeting or get-together with her friends the night before?
Yeah.
How ironic is that?
Oh, that just blew me away. That was just too much. Yeah.
Because I called her the next morning when I got the phone call, and I was at home, and they told me that they had arrested Kadatich, and they were quite positive that this was the individual. I called Nancy. I said, "Nancy, what did you do?" She says, "What do you mean?" So I said, I told her that they had arrested this individual by the name of James Kadatich, and that he was claiming that a woman with long brown hair had stabbed him, and the vague description fit Nancy's profile.
I hope that more law enforcement professionals are at least willing to consider this information. And I know that when skeptics get out there really hard and fast and say, you know, you're a fool if you ever believe any of this stuff, I think it makes harder for a guy in that position to, you know, even look at the stuff.
Well, she certainly made a believer out of me, at least with Nancy anyway. I don't know about any other of the other psychics.
Right.
She certainly gave us a lot of information of the individual before we apprehended him. And we had gotten some opposition with the prosecutor with her. He wasn't interested in hearing anything she had to say. So we were kind of working on our own, so to speak, because the information that she had given us, we were trying to put together, and the prosecutor at the time didn't want to hear about it, so there's some friction going on there. I thoroughly believe that if someone has information to offer, why not listen to it? You know, what does it hurt to listen to what someone has to say?
Right.
I mean,
right.
He's trying to solve a serious crime, such as this was a double homicide, and we felt that this individual would kill again if he wasn't apprehended, so time was in the essence. I feel that any information that you can gather or obtain, listen to it at least, and then, you know, do what you want with it, but don't refuse to listen to something that somebody has to say.
Well, thanks again. Really appreciate it, Jim.
All right. Nice talking with you, and, you know, drop me a line. Let me know.
Okay, here are some of the points I think are interesting about this interview. First, it confirms what Lieutenant Hughes said about the way he came to know Nancy, that he was initially skeptical, but he was impressed by what she knew. And come on, think about it for a minute. Imagine yourself as a detective investigating a murder, a very important murder that needs to be solved, and you don't have any clues. Of course you would be impressed by this person. This person's coming forward with information that no one could have known, and it definitely seems to be relevant to this case. Of course you're going to listen. This is your job. And of course the interview is very interesting because it completely confirms the information that Nancy gave him during the investigation. And if you think about the kind of information that she gave and the way that he's recalling it, it's not the kind of information that someone would misremember or get confused. He's very, very clear, very, very convincing about the fact that he was told this and he knew it. And then finally, this whole story about how this guy is apprehended is just amazing. And it's something that we're not really going to be able to prove in terms of this investigation, but it's something to stick in the back of your mind and just think about for a minute. Think about what are the chances that this guy would call up police and say, a woman with long dark hair ran me off the road and stabbed me in the back, and call police to his house. And then he has no wounds. He has no wounds in his back. He isn't treated for any stab wounds. He isn't taken to the hospital. He's taken into custody because they notice his car matches the description that we're looking for. And then Jim Moore calls up Nancy and says, what do you do? And it just so happens that she got together with her meditation prayer group and asked that this guy feel the pain that he's been perpetrating on other people. Coincidence? Maybe. I don't know. It's just too remarkable for me to dismiss as coincidence. But let's leave it on the side and let's just deal with the facts. And let's just deal with the more concrete evidence that Nancy Weber provided these detectives about the perpetrator when that information was not known to anyone else. Oh, yeah, and there's one more thing about this interview that we have to mention, because I suspect that it might come up in Ben Radford's rebuttal to this investigation. I suspect that because it's really the only possible thing that he could kind of draw on, and that's the political controversy in this case. Remember, Jim mentions that there's some tension between the prosecutor and the investigators, and the different members of the task force are kind of going in different directions, and that not everyone is real receptive to using a psychic detective on the case. I think that's important. I think it's important on so many different levels. It's reality, though. I mean, we have to deal with the fact that police work is political. There are elected people. There are people who have an interest in advancing their careers and their job and all the rest of that stuff. But I think we can clearly separate that out from the information that was given to members of the task force about the perpetrator. So we'll see how all that plays out. But I think it's interesting. It's interesting to hear it, and it's interesting to imagine and piece together how that factored into this case. Okay, so the final thing I wanted to do for you today is take you through some of the newspaper accounts of this case. And these were all from the New York Times. The first one appears in November 26, 1982, and it basically announces the murder. An 18-year-old high school senior stabbed repeatedly, left floating face down, holding tank. Important thing here, no mention of sexual assault of any kind. The next day, there's a newspaper account. Suitor clue is reported in New Jersey slang, and it goes on to say that they suspect that one of her suitors is involved in the case. Of course, that isn't what turns out to be true, but this is what police are thinking at this point. Then a few days later, there's a report that they're searching for a knife, and it describes how they're doing that. There's a report on the memorial service for her and how many people in the community are really upset about this and come out in support of her. Then in December of 82, less than a month later, another murder occurs, Deidre O'Brien. Police connect the two murders and believe that they're related, and that's when the task force is formed. Okay, here's another article from the New York Times that I found was particularly interesting for kind of a strange reason. It appeared in the January 16th, 1983 issue, and it's titled Women's Sight, Lack of Mall Security, and it goes on to talk about the murders. But what's interesting, it provides a sketch of a possible suspect, and I'll provide a link so you can go see this. But what's interesting is the sketch, because it looks nothing like the perpetrator, James Kadatich. It looks very Hispanic and very different than the eventual suspect. So any thought that somebody saw this in the paper or that she saw it in the paper, which doesn't really fit the case anyway because of all the information that she provides that you would never get off the sketch. But the sketch doesn't fit the perpetrator. That's my point. The next part from the New York Times I wanted to mention was the arrest. Parolee invested in murder case in Morris County, accused in one of the three unsolved homicides. And I'll read you a little bit more of that one. Morristown, New Jersey, January 18th, a 34-year-old paroled murderer was arrested by the state police early today and charged in one of the three unsolved slayings of women that have caused widespread fear throughout Morris County since Thanksgiving Day. Now, what happens later is he's convicted of this first murder and then is tried for the second murder and is convicted of that one also. But in this report, I wanted to read you a couple interesting passages that relate to some of the points we were talking about. Here we go. From October 1971 until his parole last August, Mr. Kadatich was imprisoned at the Rayford State Prison in Lake Butler, Florida, for murder and armed robbery. Now, it doesn't say this in the newspaper, but later it is also established that he did murder another inmate while he was in prison, again, exactly as Nancy Weber had predicted. And then the article goes on to say, and this is interesting, and it relates to the last point I was making about his apprehension. Mr. Kodatich came to the attention of the police investigating the three deaths at 11:20 on Sunday night. Mr. Kodatich called the Morristown police from his home to report that he had been stopped while driving in neighboring Morris Township, about a quarter mile from the site of Mrs. O'Brien's abduction, and reported that he had been stabbed in the back by an unknown assailant. The investigation into his account that he had been run off the road and stabbed in search of his car led to his arrest for Ms. O'Brien's murder. Then there's additional reports here on the second murder trial. He's again found guilty. This is really, really a bad person. Anyone who has any lingering doubts about his guilt or innocence need only read about this guy, and there really is no doubt. And then finally, a very interesting piece from this guy's appeal, which is, of course, standard process, you know, claiming innocence right up until the end, exhausting the court system, jamming them with all sorts of appeals, which is exactly what this guy did. But this piece has a little clip in it that's extremely relevant to this case. So this is from August 4th, 1988. He's in the appeal process, and he actually gets his death penalty sentence voided by the New Jersey Supreme Court. And here's part of what it says. Mr. Kodatich of Morristown, who was a building superintendent and had served time in Florida for murder, was not a suspect in either killing, but called attention to himself a little more than a month later. The reason this is important is it establishes what we already knew, but that the police were not looking for this guy. He was not a suspect in either one of these cases. The only thing they had were a description of the car, a tire track, and a very, very sketchy description of a dark man. So that's it. That's the results of my investigation into this case. Now we'll wait for Ben Radford from the Skeptical Inquirer to do his own investigation, and we'll compare our findings. But as I do that, I want to once again try and bring this investigation back up to the cognitive dissonance pyramid, if I can borrow a metaphor that I used at the beginning of this episode. I want to call on Ben and other skeptics who've contributed to this case on our forums to do two things. First is to stand up and share the burden of proof. I've made claims here about this investigation, and I've done some work to back it up. If you're going to debunk them, do the work. Do the necessary research to support your claims. And by the way, when you call up the New Jersey State Police and ask for Lieutenant Bill Hughes, make sure you have your tape recorder going, because we're all going to want to hear what he says when you suggest that he's misremembering the details of this case. The second thing I'd like skeptics to do is apply the same kind of good critical thinking they always talk about to this case. Because, look, I know that there are a lot of believers out there that believe very strange, very unbelievable things. But I got to tell you, sometimes the claims that skeptics make can really test the limits of common sense and reason. And that's what we want to avoid. What we want to do as collaborators on this investigation is follow the data. And then I think in the end, we'll all come to the same place. Well, that's going to do it for today. For some more information on this episode and some of the links I talked about, visit our website and the show notes at skeptico.com. That's skeptiko.com. Once there, you'll find links to all our old shows, a link to our forum where you can join what is often a very interesting discussion about our shows, and where you can also find my email link. Well, that's going to do it for today. Until next time, bye for now.